Welcome to Snap Talk. I'm Venetia Butler. In a world on autopilot, this podcast empowers you to embrace your agency. Welcome to the Snap Talk podcast, Nikki Brivik, the sex and intimacy coach. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks, Venetia. Thanks for having me.
So I think first and foremost, let's talk a little bit about you. Who are you? What is your background? And then we'll delve deeper into the topic.
Okay, so who am I? So I'm a mother of three. I've been happily married for 25 years to the love of my life. I live in Cape Town, which I absolutely love. I was originally from Joburg and I still love Joburg. The Joburg people are still the best, but I love Cape Town. I love my adopted city. I love the mountain. I love the sea. The beauty of the nature just like gets to me every single day. I'm a runner. I'm a hiker. I'm a cold water dipper. I started doing that in COVID. It's become quite addictive and everyone in Cape Town seems to be catching on to that fad. And yeah, I feel blessed to kind of live in the city and be able to do all the things I can do. So that's me as a person.
So as a person, moving to the city called Cape Town, gathering you had your children in Cape Town?
Yes. Okay. But I studied in Johannesburg. I became an attorney.
Great. So we grounded you well. And then you went to Cape Town. All right. So What got you to sex and intimacy? Let's talk a little bit about that. And how long have you been doing this?
Okay. So I'm an attorney, a qualified attorney, and I started my own practice in litigation, personal injury litigation, where someone is injured as a result of the negligence of someone else, like an animal bite or a helicopter crash or motor vehicle accident or medical malpractice. And I always loved being able to help someone. That's kind of why I chose the law that I did, even though it was monetarily. And I loved the fight and I loved the excitement and I loved the energy that litigation brings. And I started my own firm with my husband, and he still runs it. And sometimes after our third child was born, I decided to take a bit of a break and just kind of enjoy being a mother. And when I wanted to go back to doing something which I absolutely used to love, I realized that I just had kind of lost that fight that I used to have every day. And now that I was so enveloped in love, and it was hard to kind of shift between the two. Mm. So I started thinking about how could I bring my skills to something else. And I've always had this ability to talk comfortably about sex. And for me, sex is such an important part of who we are and our relationships. It gives us excitement, adventure, pleasure, and confidence into our lives. And it infuses those characteristics into everything. But there is such a secrecy and dishonesty that shrouds sex, which results in a lack of open and honest conversations and a perpetuation of false facts and ignorance. And the problem is that we're not born with shame and inhibition, but we pass this on to our children. And this creates this constant loop.
You spoke about the fact that you've always been comfortable speaking about this. And you were just about to allude to the fact that, you know, this is something we gift our children with ultimately. Was your childhood an open one? Was this a topic that was discussed in your childhood? Was this something that was, what was your childhood like regarding this?
So it's interesting that you asked that, because I actually did grow up in quite a sex positive environment. My parents were very open, very liberal, very comfortable about talking about all different topics. They were really ahead of their time, my parents. But yet I did not, when I was growing up, want to talk about sex with them. I kind of felt I think just like any child, I felt my own inhibitions that were maybe brought on by society and about school and what we hear from our friends and the playground and the magazines that we see. But because of my personality, I'm very outgoing and I love talking and I love, you know, kind of getting things out of people. I think that's kind of what allowed me to, as I got older, become more and more comfortable with it. And then meeting my husband, it's unbelievable. Nothing shocks him. He is totally comfortable talking about sex. And I always say to my mother-in-law, she somehow managed to pass this on to all three of her children because they are all very, very comfortable. So meeting him and then learning how to be as comfortable and with it, he gifted me that.
Sure.
So that kind of allowed me to explore that. So I found people, I have got a way of getting people to talk to me. And I think it's kind of my superpower that I can talk about anything without making people feel uncomfortable. And so somehow I will be out and wherever we are, I know everyone's sex lives. It's the weirdest thing. And maybe because I was a lawyer, they know that they can trust me. And it's quite weird. I almost have like a compartment that I can hear about your sex life and then not think about it when I talk about other things. I certainly don't judge it. And you're able to move past it. So even though I look around me and I generally know what's happening behind closed doors with everybody, I don't take that into other conversations. And I think people feel that. So they are able to open up to me.
So let's recap. You're sitting in your house. You have three great children. You're happily married. You don't want to go back to litigation, but you want to serve and you want to use this gift. You decide, well, I'm really good at this. People open up to me. Is that the thinking behind the Ask Nikki brand?
I love the idea of being forward-looking because we focus so much on backwards-looking, and I'm not saying therapy isn't necessary in a lot of cases, but what I find is that a lot of us don't have bad sex lives. We've got dull, boring, repetitive sex lives. So it's not like massive trauma necessarily that we're dealing with. And I kind of want to help people. Where are you right now? So I want to provide people with this sex positive environment where it's safe to have conversations and the sexual part of a person can speak freely and with a focus on it being forward-looking. And that's what made me find it so appealing to be a coach because, you know, it's much more fast-paced, forward-looking, goal-orientated. We're here. Of course, you need to know a little bit about how you got here. But now we're here. What do we want to do?
Yeah.
How do we – I love to help people traverse their unique erotic map, a roadmap. And we all need to understand our roadmap, but we don't. We don't look into it. We don't, because of our upbringings, because of the shame that we carry around us with us. And it was my desire to help people navigate around this and help them discover their sexual voice. So that's kind of why I chose to become a coach. And my Ask Nikki brand is because I want people to have a place to ask. Where can I go to do this? Is this normal? Because there's so many myths surrounding sex that I need to help people debunk because we kind of just carry around these things that we assume are the way it is. People come to me and it's like just an assumption, you know? Mm-hmm. You asked me earlier about my Ask Nikki brand.
Yes.
And I just wanted to say, I have a particular way about dressing. And it's like kind of is part of my brand because it's kind of bring out the wild side. It's all animal. Animal print to me is absolute. Like I just think it's beige. It's kind of my way of kind of expressing myself. And that's kind of how I formed the brand. And I also wanted to, it's authentic to who I am, but I want people to feel able to be authentic to who they are and how they can bring out their wild side. Because their wild side might be very vanilla to you or to me, but it's what they are comfortable with. That's the whole thing. Our erotic maps are very, very personal. That's a little bit like your own fingerprints. And if we can accept that without judging them, we can go forward in a better way. I give you a comfortable space to explore who you are and what you want to be. And that inner you, that tap into that inner wild, which may not be so wild. I don't want you to feel like you have to be wild.
Yes.
But tap into those sides of yourself that you have so far been pushing down or not exploring, not opening up to. I want to give you the right to do that. And you know, that's the one thing that I have noticed with this work. Just little changes reap massive rewards in this area. So it's, you know, just a little shift in what you've always done can make the world of a difference, both for yourself and in a partnership. And so I kind of want to be a place for the thick middle, for people who haven't explored their sexuality. You know, there are a lot of people who deal with the erotic fringes. So that's, for example, swingers or BDSM or tantra. So those people who have, or LGBTQ plus, those people all explore their sexuality almost because they have to, because they feel kind of driven to, they have no choice, they have to exploring who they are. But then you've got that thick middle of people who never explore their sexuality. We have a growth mindset when it comes to so many things, and yet we don't when it comes to sex, unless we're forced into it, like because of like our gender or our sexuality or whatever. So if you are just someone who is Joe or Jane average, you often just never look at expanding your sexual repertoire, expanding what sex means to you, pushing the boundaries. And that's where I want to come in for you, Joe and Jane average. Let me help you upgrade your sex life, supercharge it, and find a way, because let's remember, it's the way that adults play. That sex is the way that adults play. And yet we often just don't play, and we minimize pleasure. And pleasure is our birthright. We are allowed to have pleasure. The clitoris is the only body part that is there purely for pleasure. So if you are not using it, you are not actually getting the most out of what you have been given. So I want to give you permission to push yourself out of the boundaries and out of the box that maybe you have put yourself in, and find the fun and the play and the excitement and the adventure that is there waiting for you.
So based on that and all things being asked, Nikki, let's go and explore what are the top five things our average Joe and plain Jane ask you?
Okay,
what do you get asked the most?
What do I get asked the most? Well, does size matter? No. Guess what? Spoiler alert. No, it doesn't matter. It's what you do with it. I mean, they have done a study. If you are going to be precise, then girth matters more than length. But in truth, it's kind of dependent on the person. What really matters is what you do with it, how you feel. And remember, penetration is not sex. Sex does not equal penetration, even though we've been told this over and over again by the media, by sex education. As I said earlier, the most of the woman's pleasure endings all are on the outside of her vulva. So that's where the clitoris is. And the clitoris isn't just that little nub that you see at the top of the vulva. It has legs and bulbs that extend all the way behind the lips. So we need to know this, which it's not actually taught us in sex education. I see people over and over again, and they've never seen what a clitoris looks like. And let me tell you, go out there and look at what a clitoris looks like, and you realize a clitoris has more than 12,000 nerve endings, whereas the penis only has 4,000. So we need to be able to stimulate the clitoris for the pleasure of the woman. And yet penetration, for very few people, only 20% of women can orgasm through penetration alone. So that's another question I get asked a lot. What's wrong with me? Why can't I orgasm with penetration? Well, guess what? Nothing's wrong with you. Most of us do not orgasm from penetration alone. That is a massive myth.
Sure.
Because 80% of women require outside stimulation. Their clitoris stimulated. Either that's the way they orgasm, or with penetration. So that is a massive kind of thing. We shame ourselves for not being able to orgasm without penetration, but it's sometimes an impossibility because it's actually based on your biology, whether you can or cannot. So just knowing that empowers you. Yes, because you realize, okay, so there's nothing wrong with me. And you know, it empowers the man as well, because it takes that terrible pressure off him That performance, that anxiety, that he needs this hard penis at all times. Now he knows actually what really counts is my hands, my mouth, my ability to hold a sex toy, my words. Because remember, our biggest sex organ is our brain. And particularly with women, our erotic cells is much more complex than with men. And we really need to be able to be in our mind for it to be an explosive experience. So, you know, that's kind of very, very important to realize that we need to be able to bring in our mind to really be able to tap into our erotic cells.
So does size matter? What's wrong with me? What else are you asked?
Okay, so a big thing is the difference in desire. I often have people come to me. This is probably the most common thing. I've got low desire or no libido, and my partner always wants it. And so it's a desire discrepancy. And that's probably what I see most when couples have been together for a while. And the thing about this is that it boils down to a lack of understanding about desire, which is actually quite a complex thing. There's a difference between responsive desire and spontaneous desire.
Right.
So, and this is something I would definitely talk about in the masterclass, and it's really mind blowing because once you understand it, it can change everything. So some people, and if we were to put it down gender lines, experience spontaneous desire. So that's like a lightning bolt to the groin. But a lot of us, and if we were to put it along gender stereotypes, a lot of us women, we experience responsive desire, which is more in response to pleasure, not in anticipation of pleasure. And that's a very, very big difference. Because once you know that you are someone who has responsive desire, then you can actually work out how to fuel that desire, how to make you feel pleasure so that desire arrives rather than expecting it just to arrive out of the blue. So often that mismatch in desire is just a difference in desire. And once we can learn how to make that person who is responsive get hot. They can be as hot as their partner. It just took them longer to get there. So that's very, very important. And then the other thing is how you can tap into your own brakes and accelerators, because we all have our own brakes and accelerators. Those are the turn-ons and turn-offs. And how can we help ourselves to take our foot off the brake and put them firmer on the accelerator? And understanding that lets us go forward in a way. And our partner too, because then our partner can help us, you know, take our foot off the brake or put our foot on the accelerator. And that's something else that I always talk about, because it is really life-changing when you can understand what your own brakes and accelerators are. So just to give an example, brakes are like stress, overeating, you know, too much of a to-do list, your kids next door. That's a massive break. Who wants to have sex when all that's happening? Accelerators could be a massage, a nice bath, even your partner doing the washing up so you can relax a little bit. So it's all about understanding this and then being able to move forward in a positive and hopefully orgasmic way.
So a lot of what you're saying is sort of built around communication, our ability to communicate to ourselves and others. In your findings, how much of this is based on your own relationship with yourself and how well you're able to communicate, respond, interact, engage? You started by saying that so much of our relationship with sex is based on shame, to some in case secrecy is shrouded. We don't know what we don't know. We feel like we're not, you know, we're different. So how much of this do you believe has to almost start with the relationship you have with yourself?
Absolutely. I think you've hit the nail on the head. Well, first of all, communication is essential. I actually have an equation for great sex, erotic energy, eroticism. It's E equals MC cubed. So the erotic energy equals mindfulness, communication, collaboration, and creativity.
E equals M-
MC cubed.
Right.
So the M is mindfulness, mm-hmm. which we can discuss, and the C's are communication, creativity, and collaboration.
Gotcha.
So what you were saying about communication is the bedrock to making your bedrock. It's essential. Both with yourself, I like what you were saying. We need to know ourselves. We need to know what we like. We need to be able to share what we like with our partner. And I'm not just talking about what we like mindfully. It's also our bodies. So it's a little bit of what I was saying earlier. Get to know yourself. What do you like? I mean, this is an interesting thing. I often say to someone, which part of your clitoris is more sensitive? And it's like greeted with absolute, oh my goodness, like, because I often find women don't know. But if I say to them, which hand is stronger? Which leg would you kick with? Which eye do you see better with? People can answer. But when you ask them which side of your clitoris is more sensitive, they can't answer that. So take the time to know what your clitoris feels like, because remember, every clitoris has its own personality. And we need to know, what do we like? So that when do we like tapping, circular motion, going around clockwise, up, down, side to side? What do we like? Do we like to be touched over panties, under panties? Do we like material? Do we like rubbing? What do we like? Because knowing what we like allows us to share that with our partners. If we don't know what we like, how on earth can we expect our partners to be body readers and mind readers?
And suffer from failure fatigue. And then the irony is,
exactly. And then the irony is, we kind of resent them because they aren't getting it right, but we're not sharing it with them. Like, it's the same, that whole argument of, you know, why not to fake orgasms? Like, if you are faking an orgasm, you are teaching your partner exactly what not to do in bed. And then surprise, surprise, he's going to keep doing it because he thinks that's the way to your orgasm. Whereas if you show him kindly and with compassion and in a nice way, this is what I like, well, then he's going to get it right. And guess what? That's going to equal more pleasure, and more pleasure equals more orgasms. And, you know, everyone is a winner. So you need to know yourself, and you need to be able to communicate that. And then again, it's not just your body. It's what is your mind? What turns you on? And know that without judgment. You know, this is the weird thing. When it comes to exercise or what we like to eat, you know, you don't judge yourself or your partner. Oh, I like Italian. What's wrong with me? Why do I like Italian? Is there something wrong with me that I like Italian food? You don't think about it like that. Or why do I like yoga, not cycling? What's wrong with me? Why do I only like yoga? We just accept that we are different, and we all different, and that's what makes us beautiful and human. We shame ourselves for having different wants and desires. And I say, don't judge yourself. Remember, this is our intimate life. We're allowed to have desires, wants, fantasies. It doesn't have to go with real life. Just because you have a fantasy doesn't mean you have to do it, or that you want to do it even, you know. It just means that is your inner life, your inner who you are, and what's created you has come from where you know, who you were growing up, what you got from sex education, what you got from the playground and other people, what you've read. This all makes up who you are and should be embraced rather than shunned and humiliated. And knowing it is empowering, because we can use what we know to get creative and bring more pleasure into our lives in every aspect.
So what you're saying is that relationship with self is the one with which we can communicate. And a lot of times, in the absence of this, we are actually perpetuating this problem. I want to talk a little bit about myths. I'm going to raise the one that I'd like you to clarify for us the most, that most people have affairs because of an unhappy sex life. Is this true? Do you find this?
Well, I don't know if they have a, I think that's a little bit simplistic, that people have affairs, because of their unhappy sex life. And I don't think so. But what I do think is that we know that affairs happen, first of all, not necessarily, you know, Esther Perel, she's the famous relationship and sex expert. She kind of says, sometimes the person who is the weak, who has been harmed in the relationship, has been harmed by the affair, is not the person who was harmed in the relationship. So, you know, what goes on behind closed doors is very difficult and is very complex and has many, many facets. So it's not always simplistic. But what I can say is that sex helps to keep your glasses rose tinted. So most times when there is a breakdown in a marriage, I'm not saying that it's always an affair or anything. I'm just saying that there usually is some kind of a problem with the sex. You're not having it. You're not having enough of it. You aren't talking about it. You're not having what you want to have. So I'm not saying it is the only ingredient for a good relationship. And if both of you don't want to have sex or are happy with not having sex, then it's not a problem at all. But if one wants it and the other doesn't want it, that's where the problem comes in. And what I was saying is that if it is something that is important to you when you're going into the relationship, then it should be something that remains important, and it should be something that you work on, just because it's like it's an investment in your relationship. So that's kind of, and like I was saying earlier, when you are having good sex, it's very hard to be irritated with your partner, because as I said, it keeps your glasses rose tinted. Like when you're fighting, but you're having good sex, well, those irritations don't matter so much. You're kind of able to put it away. You're able to laugh with each other. I think that's the thing. Sex can bring humor into a relationship. It brings you closer. It takes down the walls. You know, I sometimes have clients sitting opposite me and I can almost feel a wall between them.
Sure.
And when they have the sex and they're able to start talking to each other and communicating with each other, that wall crumbles, and so quickly. The weird thing is it crumbles so quickly, but it comes up so quickly. So you know how sometimes you can think, oh, I'm just too tired. I don't feel like sex now. And suddenly that can become an extended period of time. It becomes harder and harder to find your way back to each other. But if you keep it ticking along and you are able to keep connecting in this vulnerable space, you can really foster that connection. And then things are easier. Things flow. Things glide. It just feels easier. And that's why sometimes people say that sex is the glue. But it definitely can raise problems, because everyone wants to feel desired.
Great.
Everyone wants. And if one party is never feeling that, it can obviously lead to them looking for it elsewhere. And I think if you're not talking about it, why are we not having sex? We used to have sex. Then it can obviously raise problems and can lead to affairs, obviously.
And then there's this perception of rejection. I'm not good enough. You know, there's so much playing into that space. You said something interesting. You said if both are not interested, that is actually okay. But when there's an impasse around the desire in a relationship where the one does, the other one doesn't, that's when it can be quite conflicting. Because I find that a lot of couples, specifically who've been in relationships and marriages for a very long time, tend to sort of almost neglect this. You spoke about the aspect that this brings humor. You said that sex is fun. It's about playing. Do you think that couples who play together stay together longer? And what advice would you give a couple where they've actually both just neglected it and they really haven't tabled this as an important enough matter to discuss?
Absolutely. Look, that's kind of what I was talking about with responsive desire, spontaneous desire. If you are someone who has responsive desire and needs to be warmed up in order to feel pleasure, you could easily not have sex. If you aren't, brought into the pleasure, and you're not, no one's taken time to get you into the mood, or you haven't taken time, because it's not always about your partner having to get you into the mood. We need to take responsibility for our own sex lives, for our own pleasure, for bringing that to the partnership. So I think the thing is, what people often overlook is the quality of our sex lives. Because let's face it, if we are having boring, dull, repetitive sex, then we probably don't want it. It's like saying, who wants to have melted ice cream that I don't even like? Of course, you're not going to want to do it. But if you're having fun, amazing, exciting, adventurous sex and lots of orgasms, not that you have to have an orgasm to enjoy sex, but I'm just saying, if you have this excitement, well, then tell me you don't want to have sex. If we are having hot, amazing, exciting sex that gets us turned on, then we question, if you don't want to be having that sex, then maybe it's totally your libido. But if you really just haven't prioritized it, haven't taken the time to find out the kind of sex you should be having, well, then that's where we can explore. That's where I will help you bring in all those things that can start letting you have that excitement in your life. And that's what I'll also bring in the masterclass, so that you take away proper tips and tools that you can use in the bedroom. Because there are things that can be done. We don't need to be suffering and thinking of England while we're lying on our back. We shouldn't be. We should be pushing our boundaries, finding the things that turn us on, even talking about sex. I mean, what you'll learn from just having this conversation is talking about sex can sometimes make you hot for sex, listening to things about sex, but we don't do it. We kind of, you know, I'll often say to the person, tell me about the last time you had sex. And they'll say, well, I turned to my wife. I said, are you in the mood? I've just put my phone down. Well, no. Who's in the mood, especially if you're a responsive desire person with just like, oh, you're in the mood, or the boob honk. I mean, that initiation is always a horrendous, or the slap on the bum, which can be nice in the right time and place, but not when it's like, oh, you're keen for something, honey. So how do we make this get us into the mood for desire? And remember, with women, it takes us longer to get aroused, because just our physiology, it takes time for our clitoris to get engorged and feel that those delicious sensations. Whereas a man, it's much easier. You know, to get an erection is a lot easier than for a woman. And it doesn't take the amount of time it takes for us to get engorged and start enjoying getting out of our heads and getting into our bodies. So we need to start giving ourselves the time to want, and the kind of sex we want to be having, not that awful, boring, repetitive sex. I know the thing is that everyone could be having a great sex life if we work at it. And a lot of people don't like to hear that, because great sex does take work, just like anything in life. Sure. Anything that is worth having, we need to work at. And we can have it, we just need to work at it. And especially for women, we need it more. People think that men love difference and change and want more excitement in sex. But my experience is actually it's the women. We get bored more easily. We get tired more easily of the same kind of sex. If you ask a man, would you have the same kind of sex forever, three times a week for the rest of your life? They might very well say yes, because it's kind of penetration-based, orgasm-focused. You awesome. Ask us if we would have this. Oh, no, thank you.
Sure. So if you were speaking to the men in this audience right now, what is the one piece of advice you would give them? And then what would you say to the woman?
Okay, so piece of advice for the men is go slowly. And when I say slowly, I mean slowly, because we need to be aroused. We need you to take the time to arouse us, tease us, build up the anticipation, and have us begging for more, and then still don't give it to us, because that creates more dopamine, more desire. You want us to be begging you, and only when it's almost impossible to ignore, give us what we want. So that, and slowly, slowly, slowly with everything, a tease, coax, entice. That's kind of for us. And for women, I think my advice for women is learn to be able to ask for what you want. My experience is that most men want to pleasure their women.
Sure.
So men are actually, we narcissists, we women, we like us ourselves to have pleasure. You ask a man, most men want to pleasure their partners, but they just don't know how to go about it. So we need to show them, we need to guide them. And then for both of us, for me, sex toys is the biggest, hottest tip you can take away from here. Every sex lab deserves sex toys. Why? Because they are a tool, and they're a very, very effective tool that helps us take our sex life from stale to sexy, and it supercharges our sex life. Why? Because first of all, say a vibrator is the most effective way to stimulate a clitoris. It gives us that persistent rhythmic movement that we that a clitoris is love.
Yes.
And that it's very hard for a man to sustain. It also shortens the time, because remember, for a woman, it takes us a lot longer to orgasm than a man. So like the average man will take 3 to 6 minutes to orgasm, whereas the average woman takes 18 minutes or more. I mean, that's, it's not longer. Unusual for a woman to take 45 minutes to orgasm. But this is something that surprises people. I find the women that do take long, they feel so embarrassed and ashamed. They think, oh my God, why is it taking me so long? And guess what? The second you think that, it's going to take you longer. And what's the race? I mean, pleasure is the measure. What are you racing for? Remember, an orgasm lasts such a short amount of time. For men, it's around 6 seconds. For women, it's around 23 seconds. So what are you racing to the end for? Enjoy the journey. It's not about the destination. It's the journey of pleasure, of getting to know your body, of enjoying what you are experiencing in this moment with your partner. So what are you rushing for? You know, you spend less time. The average time that a person spends having sex is probably about 15 minutes. Now, that is half of a short sitcom. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, what is the rush? Why are we rushing? And if you are spending too short on the time, the woman cannot be experiencing the same amount of pleasure. One thing we do know, the more time we spend on arousal, the more pleasure there is, the stronger the orgasms. So take your time and explore what you can add, and see sex toys as a tool that can add to your partnership rather than detract from it, because it can also be used on your partners, and it just creates variety and novelty. And that's what the human brain needs. We need excitement. And with sex toys, that adds a lot of excitement, and there's so many different kinds. But I'll talk all about this in my masterclass, and I am happy to guide you.
So I want to speak about that. And just before we do speak about this, I wanted to speak about how a person's, you spoke so strongly about it. It's play. It's releasing this dopamine. It's allowing you to be happy. How much of that do you think contributes to the other factors in your life? Do you think that when this is healthy and this is in its rightful place, and, you know, we're utilizing the tools and the gifts of a healthy sexual relationship, how much of this have you seen play out in people presenting as just happier people, more functional, able to really be productive, because a very vital need is being met?
Absolutely. I love that, Venetia. And that's why I talk a lot in corporate wellness, because I think people kind of undermine the importance of sexual connection, relationship connection. It's not something we taught at school. No. And that is more important than maths. I mean, I know people would argue with me, but why aren't we taught how to have relationships, how to have proper sexual relationships as well? Because when we have got that right, we can go out into the world and be the best version of ourselves. And then we can come back and almost, like I always say, like that my husband is my docking station. Like, I come back and I refuel, and then I can go out and be this fabulous person because I've kind of had my fill. And you know what happens when you've had, I mean, they've done studies that people who've had an orgasm are more productive the next day. You know, when you have connected and you feel good and your body feels good and you go out into the world, when that person cuts in front of you in the car, you don't flip him off. You kind of smile. And then guess what? He's so shocked that you didn't flip him off. He's like, oh, maybe he smiles back. And then guess what? You go into work and you feel chuffed and you offer to make tea for your fellow workers.
Shock there.
And they think, well, yeah, and it raises the vibrational frequency. I know that, you know, people kind of roll their eyes, but for me, happiness is contagious and it helps us be kinder and nicer to people. And then hopefully that just kind of rolls on and rolls on. It's hard to be angry when you are happy and full, pleasure filled. And that's why I think that it is so important for us to focus on sexual satisfaction, relationship satisfaction. You know, all these things go towards our longevity. I've done lots of talks on longevity because remember, emotional connection is so important. People who have close relationships and close connections, they live longer and they have greater sexual satisfaction, relationship satisfaction. And why? Because we are social beings. We need to be connected. And what better way than to be connected to our closest partner, the one at home. And then we are able to kind of flourish and grow and go out and, as I say, be the best version of ourselves.
So would it equally be fair to say that this should never be a tool you use as punishment? Because the minute that you place this on the idol, on the table of emotions, and the minute you place this on the table of manipulation, you've lost the creation of it and what it was there for. Would that be fair to say?
Some people do unfortunately do that, and that creates so much bitterness and distrust and dislike. It shouldn't be a tool that you withhold for a certain reason or give, because I think that is a key that I've noticed a lot. Women often think that sex is for their partner. Don't know if we were taught it when we were growing up, that pleasure is for the man and not for us. And I want you to embrace your pleasure, because it's not about giving pleasure to your partner, being there as a chamber for his pleasure. It's about you also having pleasure and creating something pleasurable together. And that's why in my equation, that's the collaboration. You can't have great sex with one of you.
Sure.
It requires teamwork. And it's us against the problem. I always say it's like running a three-legged race, because you have to learn how to do it with each other to get to the end, to be able to have this amazing thing. We need to learn what gets us going. What are these two different people bringing to this particular situation, and being open to constantly learning and changing and evolving, and not being there for the other person. Although sometimes, remember, that's the thing. Sometimes you are there just to pleasure your partner.
The give and take. Because
maybe that's what you want to get from it. So that's another thing, is not every sexual experience has to be this amazing. People put a lot of pressure on their sex lives. And I say not every sexual experience has to be amazing. It can be connecting. It can be fun. Can be funny. It can be adventurous. It can be exciting. I mean, take that time. I'm sure you've had an experience where you've had sex on the beach or in the car. It's not necessarily comfortable. It's not actually the best experience you've ever had. But often it's just the fact that you did something different together that makes you enjoy and live off what you remember. It pays those relationship dividends. But the actual experience was not as hot as you think it was. So I think there's a saying, stop shooting all over your sex life. Your sex life doesn't have to be one way, or how you think it should be. It can be what you create. The creativity is the side where I find people find it very, very difficult to be creative in the bedroom. And that's where I'm there to help, because somehow that's my superpower. I'm able to tap into how to be creative in the bedroom. And it doesn't have to be massive changes. Small changes make big differences. But we need to see it as a place to be creative, because remember, that's play.
Sure.
Is being creative. Remember when we were little and we used to play all those like creative games? We need to tap into that part of ourselves. That part that can, you know, pay doctors and nurses or dress up or be somewhere else in their heads.
Yes. It led me to think about this question, and I guess you've confirmed it. What I was actually going to ask you is, whose responsibility is it to keep this fire burning? And you've answered that. You've said, you know, this is not a him only, her only. This is a partnership in all ways. And sometimes it's a give and take, and sometimes, but the outcome is clear. So this notion of you're responsible, I'm responsible, I think you've clarified that quite a lot in terms of who's.
Well, just it makes me think of Brené Brown, because I know a lot of people love Brené Brown. And, you know, she always says that it doesn't have to, a relationship isn't 50-50.
No.
Sometimes it's 100-0 or 80-20. Yes. It kind of, that's where you need to go. Sometimes if you are a young mother and you've hardly slept and the last thing you can think of, you haven't got out of your pajamas all day, you haven't stopped being a mother, so you haven't stopped being touched, and your partner really wants to have sex, well then maybe he needs to give you the space and time without the baby, let you have a bath, let you tap into that side of yourself that you can't even remember. Then maybe it's your partner's time to take the 100% on.
Or maybe you're on 10 and he's got to bring that 90. He's got to fill that.
Correct.
I do like
that. Exactly. It's all about give and take and how you can be there for each other. And sometimes you need to be there more for the one, and the other needs to be there more for you at a different time. And that's the same in sex. You know, you don't have to always, you don't always have to be the one who's giving or receiving. Sometimes you can be, you can swap that around and say, well, today you got it all, and, you know, I'm okay with that. But remember, Friday's my turn.
And not that we're keeping score, but we can certainly remember this. So as you probably have guessed, Nikki is going to be at the Women's Day event on the 1st of August, hosting the Sex and Intimacy Masterclass. So excited to have you. And if this has been a small taste of what you're going to share, I can tell you wholeheartedly, women are going to walk out smiling, happy, playing again, creative, enjoying, exploring. All this and more to expect at the Women's Day Event Masterclass with Nikki. Nikki, thank you. It's been such a pleasure to have you just give us a taste of this and understand a little bit more about these concepts, as you said in the beginning, that get so often shrouded with secrecy and shame and, you know, what we don't know. Nikki, if you had to sum up sentence that you would define in terms of this topic and that you would associate with most, what would that be? One piece of advice.
Well, I think it's for this particular audience, it's why I chose this topic, is you can have it all. You can have a career and a relationship and kids and hot sex. You can be successfully satisfied.
I love that.
Don't be told by anyone else that you can't be, because you not only can you be, you deserve to be. You are owed it to yourself, and I'm going to help you get it.
Great. Thank you, Nikki. Last question. If somebody wants to know more about you, find you, where would they be able to find you?
Okay, my Instagram handle is ask.nikki, N-I-C-K-I. And please follow me, because I give lots and lots of tips and advice, and I'm a source for you. And it's also a nice way to show your partner, to open up the conversation, because sometimes it can be difficult. You can say, look what I've just heard, and what do you think of this? So me. I don't mind being blamed. And then I am on all the other platforms too.
It's under the Ask Nikki.
Instagram's my main handle.
Great. Yeah. So good to have you. Thank you for being such a pleasure today. You get Cape Town. We get the information. We appreciate this. Have an awesome day, Nikki. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Vanessa. And I'm looking forward to the 1st of August.
You're welcome.